Chapter 60. Luxembourg, Belgium and Holland. The Versailles Treaty had established a French military presence in Germany at great cost to the Germans. But many French politicians also wanted the Low Countries to serve as an anti-German buffer. Marshal Foch had his headquarters in Luxembourg, exercising almost as much power as the Grand Duke. Luxembourg, an integral part of the Low Countries until 1839, when it was forced to separate, had by now become used to its independence and sought only neutrality. The Grand Duchy had an army of 250 men and an arsenal of 3 cannon. The country was rich in iron and steel mills and depended on a customs union with Germany for its continued prosperity. The treaty had put an end to this union and the French government moved in to replace Germany as Luxembourg's new economic partner. As part of the treaty, France acquired the German-owned railways of the Grand Duchy. Article 67 of the Versailles Treaty. Luxembourg had been drawn into a different sphere of influence overnight. The French government also wanted to reduce Belgium to a similar status. The French Revolution had plunged the country into a bloodbath equal to the massacres the revolutionaries had visited on the French province of Vendée, which somehow gave the present French politicians a proprietary interest in all things Belgian. Paris regarded the Belgians as half-French and never took Belgian sovereignty seriously. During the war, Belgium had fought on the Allies' side, but the Belgian king, Albert I, had attempted in 1917 to enter peace negotiations with both Austria-Hungary and Germany, which caused considerable friction with the Entente. The king said he was not prepared to sacrifice what was left of his army. The tension continued at the Versailles Conference because of Belgium's insistence on remaining neutral. There was no advantage in being the meat in the sandwich between Germany and France. The war had cost Belgium 51,000 dead, as well as considerable destruction. Belgium received preferential treatment in the matter of reparations, but it was interested mostly in enlarging its territory. Since the 15th century, Belgium had been whittled down by a third. United with Flanders and Brabant during the proud days of Burgundy, Zeeland, Limburg and Luxembourg had been lost to the Netherlands. Belgian ships were at the mercy of the Dutch government, which controlled the main branches of the Scheldt, which gave Antwerp access to the sea. Tardieu was an intelligent and astute politician who saw great opportunities in restoring Belgium to its former size. The Dutch province of Limburg jutted out between Belgium and the Rhineland, and Tardieu thought a Belgian Limburg would be preferable in terms of ready reinforcement of its occupation forces in the Rhineland. Tardieu also saw the advantage of liberating the approaches to the great port of Antwerp from Dutch control. It was the gateway to Western Germany from the North Sea. He decided to press Belgian claims to its lost territories. Although few people in France knew that such territories had once been Belgian before the 1839 treaties, the Belgian cause suddenly gained national favor in France. The 1839 treaties, sterile and onerous, must be abolished, Tardieu told the peace conference on February 26, 1919. The Belgian government was not as enthusiastic as Tardieu and simply demanded the treaties be revised to remove Dutch control over the waterways to Antwerp and to return Limburg. More Belgian than the Belgians, Tardieu was instrumental in creating yet another commission to study Belgian territorial claims. The commission came up with 3 recommendations. The 1839 treaties would have to be revised entirely. Holland would have to participate in this revision. The general aim of this revision would be, according to the League of Nations objective, to free Belgium from the strictures on its sovereignty imposed by the 1839 treaties. Within days, these recommendations were adopted by the Paris Conference. On March 8, 1919, explained Tardieu, I presented the Commission's report to the Supreme Council, which unanimously adopted it. On May 7, Germany was shown the treaty and agreed to abide by its conditions. Tardieu, Peace, page 245. Wilson was at a loss to see why Germany had to be involved in a localized Dutch-Belgian border conflict or how Holland was going to agree to revoke an 80-year-old set of treaties with the resultant loss of territories. Tardieu suggested a solution whereby Holland would be compensated for the loss of its Zeelander and Limburger citizens by receiving Germans living in the Ems region of Germany. Holland could be compensated with the people of Emsland or the Gelder region, who are Dutch by race and tradition. Tardieu, Peace, page 246. Wilson replied, "You are asking that Germany hand over some of its territory to a neutral country. It may be right, but it is difficult to motivate. Indeed, Germany had never infringed on Dutch neutrality and Holland had not laid a finger on Belgium throughout the war. Apart from the fact that this Belgian-Dutch-German imbroglio did not take into consideration the wishes of the people, who were to be exchanged like so many goods at a bazaar, it neglected to recall that the 1839 treaties had been imposed by the British for the main purpose of thwarting French trade. The British had earlier managed to rally Europe against Napoleon on the issue of French control of the Scheldt River. In 1839 the British feared that the Queen of Belgium, who was the daughter of the French King Louis Philippe, would bring back a French presence in the Antwerp region. 8 years before, Belgian independence had been saved by the French army fighting back Dutch troops who had invaded Belgium and were about to take Brussels. After 8 years of negotiations, the British finally imposed Dutch rule over Zeeland. The British establishment had once more used Holland, as in previous centuries, to contain France. Now, after throwing its empire into a murderous war and savoring victory, the British were not about to grant Belgium its rightful claims, particularly when these were backed by France. King Albert I was an eloquent advocate for the return of the Dutch-occupied Belgian provinces. He was, however, surprised at the objections the British kept putting in his way through the Admiralty. Lloyd George was suddenly deferring in his foreign policy to the British Admiralty, leaving for himself the role of friendly neighbor. He agreed, after much Belgian pleading, to modify the status of the Scheldt, but added that the Admiralty would never consent to any territorial changes. When Belgian Minister Vandervelde almost implored, "Think of our people, do not deny them their aspirations," Lloyd George curtly replied, "You had fewer people killed than we had." The British rested their case on the counting of tombstones. Tardieu tried to court the British by proposing that a plebiscite be held within a few years to determine whether the Zeelanders and Limburgers wanted to be part of Belgium. The formula had worked for Saarland, but this time the British made sure Wilson would refuse point blank. The Belgians regarded Tardieu as a tireless champion for their cause. They had lost their fight for the restoration of their country, but from now on they would no longer be neutral. They were firmly on France's side. To offset Belgian disappointment, the Allies decided to throw them a few crumbs, in the form of a strip of German territory, Eupen and Malmedy, adjoining the Belgian border, west of Aachen. In scenes reminiscent of the Saarland operation, 55,000 Germans suddenly found themselves citizens of another country. Once more Wilson's 14 points were swept aside. The control of Germany's western frontier was, however, only the beginning. More was to come on the eastern frontier of Germany. The Allies would trade millions of people from one country to another in order to accommodate petty nationalistic greed and vengeance. Danzig and the corridor, Upper East Silesia, West Prussia, Posen, and Sudetenland would see their populations handed over for the disposal of the Allies.